time for another podcast episode. As I noted in the last episode, what I'm doing is talking about recent blog posts because people don't read anymore. So I'm recording these short videos and publishing both the video and the audio on my podcast and on YouTube. So it's about 7:30 a.m. right now. The baby is asleep. So I am recording this in the kitchen, which is the furthest room from the baby's room, and keeping my voice as low as possible. And for some reason, everybody else in the family is up there too. Baby's mother, my dog, because nobody wants to be with me, because apparently I smell. I don't know. So today we're going to talk about the second wave, whatever that is. At this point, I'm sure you've heard that much of Canada is in what some people are calling a second wave of COVID-19. Much of Europe is as well, and Southern Hemisphere. Now, what I want to talk about is whether or not that is true, and if it is, what constitutes a wave, and what causes a wave, and what ends the wave. First thing is that wave isn't really a scientific term when it comes to pandemics or epidemics in general. It comes from looking at the curve, the shape of the curve. If you graph the number of new cases per day, the incidence rate, you see on the first day it's this high, and second day it's that high, and so forth. It goes to a peak, it comes down, then there's a period where the caseload is low, perhaps not zero, but low, and then the process starts again, and you look at that, and it looks wave-like, almost like a sine wave, but clearly not. It's more jagged. Okay. Now, the reason that a lot of scientists don't like to use the word wave is that wave implies two things. One is that there's something innate about the disease that causes it to behave that way, like it responds to the time of year. It's seasonal, and it has nothing to do with the nature of human beings. It's just that the disease waxes and wanes in response to certain environmental cues. And the second reason is that wave suggests that all we have to do is sit tight and ride it out, like an ocean wave, like you're surfing an ocean wave. And both of those concepts are false, especially when it comes to this disease. Historically, almost every respiratory pandemic has followed this wave pattern. I struggle to think of an example where one hasn't. Certainly the most famous one is the 1918 Spanish flu. That had a big wave. Then, you know, the disease waned. And then a few weeks later, it exploded into a much bigger wave of cases. And that's part of the fear of what will happen with COVID. We have the second wave that will be even bigger, and possibly a third and fourth wave. If you look at the curve for MERS and SARS, there was also a bimodal distribution, we call it, two humps on a curve. Okay, so what's actually happening here? We don't like to use the word wave. We prefer resurgence, so a new surge of cases. And it's entirely driven by human behavior. People cause the rise in cases, people cause the decline in cases, and human behavior causes the rise and decline again. One way of looking at this is to consider the predator-prey model in ecology. So if you've never studied this in public school, think about the population of rabbits on a field. Right? So one rabbit has a couple of kids, and both of those rabbits have a bunch of other kids, and goes up and up. Nothing prevents the rabbit population from climbing exponentially, except, you know, the food source. Take the food source out of the picture for a second and consider that maybe the fox population is keeping the rabbit population at bay. Foxes eat rabbits. So the more foxes there are, the fewer rabbits there will be. So the rabbit population increases, and the foxes are eating the rabbits, and the more rabbits the foxes eat, more foxes there are, because the foxes are reproducing. until eventually there's so many foxes that they're eating all the rabbits. So the rabbit population stabilizes and declines. When it declines, the foxes start to die out because they're starving. There are not enough rabbits for them to eat. And so the fox population starts to decline. Until now, there's only a handful of rabbits, a handful of foxes, foxes eat the rabbits, and the cycle continues over and over again, right? So the waves of rabbits are followed by a lagging wave of foxes. So there's nothing innate about rabbits that compels them to have a population that is wave-like. It's in response to the behavior of foxes that compels them to have that behavior. Similarly, there's nothing implicit about the nature of the disease that compels it to have this wave-like behavior. It's compelled by the behavior of people. In this example, people are the rabbits, and the disease are foxes. And the behavior of people isn't like rabbits eating in the field and reproducing. It's people venturing outside and being less circumspect about their public health behavior. The more we do so, the more the virus says, ooh, people to infect, and the infection rate goes up. And the more people get scared, oh my God, the infection rate's going up. And we do start doing proper things like distancing and mask wearing and hiding inside during lockdown. The virus says, oh, there's nobody else to infect. And the numbers come down again. And the numbers come down and people say, oh, look, it's safe outside. Let's go outside. Or rather, let's go to bars and parties and things. And the virus says, oh, people to infect. And the numbers go up again. So it's human behavior. Okay. Having said that, are there other factors at play here? Yeah, there is a susceptibility. So the most popular model for infectious disease epidemiology is called the SEIR model. S stands for susceptible, E stands for exposed, I for infected, and R for removed. So in any given population, there is a number of susceptible people, susceptible to the disease. That population, a proportion, will be exposed. Okay? Let's say all of them are. Take the E out of the equation. Call the SIR model now. So everyone gets exposed eventually. And of that exposed population, a certain proportion will become infected with the disease, and a certain proportion will be removed. And you get removed either from recovering, you get sick and you get better, or you die. Either way, you're not going to infect anybody once you've recovered or died. So you can probably imagine, and if I were a more circumspect podcaster, I would actually put graphs up on the video, but I'm too lazy. You just get me talking about this. You can imagine that you start off with a lot of susceptible people, and they start becoming more infected and become removed. And as they become removed, the number of susceptible people comes down because more people are getting infected and either dying and recovering, right? As the number of infected people increases. So susceptibility comes down, infection comes up, right? And when susceptibility gets down to zero, then there's no one left to infect and that wave is over, okay? So that's another way of looking at the wave dynamic. The thing is with COVID-19 in Canada, we think maximally 5% of the population has been infected, which means that a whopping 95% of the population is still susceptible, right? That's why we still are able to ride that SIR curve, because most people have not become infected and been removed. This is not an argument in favor of herd immunity approach, which is, you know, what we call now the strategy of just letting it run wild in people. And the reason that I'm not advocating that approach is with the infection fatality rate of somewhere between 0.5 and 1%, if it runs wild in the Canadian population, that's hundreds of thousands of deaths. Let's try to avoid mass death if we can. Okay? So, what is the takeaway message from this? Yeah, waves are a thing, if you want to call them that. I prefer to call them resurgences. And it's not like it was inevitable. It was inevitable only to the extent that the population remains susceptible and to the extent that we refused to continue the public health measures that kept the disease at bay. Okay, so what do we do? Well, we're going to see the cases increase. Whether or not they increase to a higher level than what we had back in March and April is anyone's guess. That comes down again to human behavior. If we do not lock down again, then we have the risk of that number increasing dramatically. But I don't think we have to lock down again. And the reason for that is we have some advantages now that we didn't have back in February, March, and April. Number one, we understand the disease a bit better. Number two, we have already deployed those tools we need to deploy. Masks, distancing, air purifiers, strategies in the workplace for keeping your desks apart, whatever it takes, you know. Tools in public transit to minimize contact with people. Rules around social gatherings. And three, we have the opportunity now for targeted lockdowns. So we can, you know, maybe focus on a particular geographical sector of the population and compel them to have more social restrictions until their caseload comes down and keep rolling it around the province or country to avoid a complete national shutdown. All that takes political will, administrative oversight, and public buy-in. So if we have those three things, we can avoid the need for a lockdown. Do we have those three things? Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. So that's where we are. I will add that I'm talking about cases here, not deaths. I don't anticipate the death rate to be as high as it was earlier. Mostly for two reasons. One is I think our older population is better protected. And second, we have a better understanding of how to treat the disease. So it's not as much of a death sentence as it was. And it never was a death sentence, by the way, because the infection fatality rate is quite low compared to some other things, but high compared to things like flu. I gotta couch my language very carefully because whatever I say, people are going to latch on to and misquote me and use it to propel whatever personal political agenda they have. Okay, so that's the wave situation. Last thing is, are we in the second wave? That's what journalists ask me all the time. Are we in the second wave? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. It looks like it, and I gauge that because of the rate of increase of cases in the last few days. It's exponential growth. It resembles the exponential growth we saw back in March, April. But this might just reflect the behaviors of the end of August, of that hyper-social period of people trying to get their last bit of fun out of the summer because they anticipated bad things are coming, I think. And maybe that peak will come down quickly. I don't know. I don't know. What we see in France and Spain and other parts of Europe is their numbers just kept on rising during this second wave period. So they're definitely in that second resurgence, second surge period. And I'm not sure what their peak will be because it's looking pretty bad there. All this is to say that we know what to do, okay? Takeaway message is still, I'm sorry to say it, we have to wear masks in indoor places. We have to keep our physical distance of 2 meters when we can. And we must avoid unnecessary indoor gatherings, okay? Weddings, house parties, please don't. I want to go to them too, please don't. Okay. If we do these things, if we avoid them, I think we can avoid the economic penalty that will come from more severe restrictions down the road. All right, hopefully I didn't say anything too misleading or stupid. And if I did, I blame it on the fact that I'm poorly slept and the coffee's not very strong. Thank you.